All right, you're back in the DFSR here with a PGA podcast, Tuesday, June 5th. I'm Doug Norrie here with Chris Durrell, our main PGA contributor, and I would just say golf guru. Chris, how's it going, man?
It's going great. Coming off an awesome week, looking to keep it going here at St. Jude this week.
Yeah, I know you texted me on Sunday that you were in a little bit of a sweat for the it was the Memorial, right? It was
yeah.
A Memorial last week. Yeah, you were in a little bit of a sweat for the Memorial with some of your lineups. How far did you end up getting there?
I got 22nd in the drive for the green. I think that's a $5 entry. I only had four entries in last week, but I got 22nd. So it was close to the 100 grand. I ended up about $600 or $700 up. Also hit the outright bet as well with DeChambeau. Went down to a three-way playoff, and my PGA lineup actually had all three of the guys that were in the playoff. So if Stanley would have won, I probably would have, jumped up into that top 10. I think he was the lowest owned of the three. But DeChambeau won, so I won the outright and 22nd. So it was overall a really good week.
Yeah, that's awesome. We hope we keep it going here this week at the FedEx St. Jude Classic. We have you were kind of lamenting off the air about how we'll get into talk about what the course looks like and who some of the plays are. But you were doing a little lamenting off the air that the field for this wasn't all that strong. Do you want to explain, maybe to the uninitiated golf person, which I was off the air, why some of the reasons the field might not be as strong as usual, and what happens with the timing of the schedule?
Yeah, coming off a strong field last week, Jack's tournament, Jack Nicklaus there, the Memorial, and then the U.S. Open's next week, so this kind of falls right in the middle. So, most guys will be in trying to get in the top 60 in the world to get into that U.S. Open next week. But this week, yesterday, there was a ton of qualifiers around the country for players that weren't already in the field to get in. So a lot of them, went in those qualifiers, made it into the U.S. Open. A lot of those players were in this field and have since dropped out. Like a list would be like Hostler, Adam Scott, Keegan Bradley, Ollie Schneider-Jans, Russell Knox, Patrick Rogers, Jamie Lovemark, KJ Choi, Steve Marino, Bud Cauley. That was kind of an accident thing. He was in a car accident. And JJ Spahn, and then this morning as well, Patton Kizzire dropped out too. So that's a lot of big-name players that were in this field. So, I didn't add on my sheet. I took those names out of my sheet. The official world golf ranking average for this tournament is like 455, and I didn't add the players that were replaced, those players that have withdrawn. So it's probably going to be more like around 500 average official world golf ranking, whereas last week was, around 200. So it's a pretty weak field. Couple big names at the top, but really there's only about, I think there's two of the top 10 and like four or five of the top 20 players in the world, and that's about it.
We'll get to talking about some of the plays. You wrote up a pretty extensive article with some of your top plays. We've also been behind the scenes starting to develop some PGA projections, starting to look at, what are some of the important factors, how we quantify some things with golf. And I've been, I've been kind of working in, like I said, like sort of in beta mode on this in the background and throwing ideas and off you and saying, what makes sense here? What should we be looking for? And I think at the end of this podcast, after you talk about some of your plays, I can go through some of the guys that our system, this new system is pulling out. And just to say, does this pass the sniff test? Because, you can have all the inputs in the world, and at the end of the day, sometimes the numbers are going to tell you a lot, and sometimes the numbers are going to throw you off. And I want to throw some of these guys out there toward you and say, does this guy and this guy make sense? We'll do that kind of near the end of the podcast. Tell us a little bit about the course here, what kind of stuff you're looking for in terms of skill going in, and what kind of, we could talk about what sort or type of golfer that you're sort of targeting, and then we can get into some of your plays.
Yeah, so the course for the FedEx St. Jude, same as it has been for I believe the whole length of this tournament, is TPC Southwind in Memphis, Tennessee. It's a par 70, 7,244 yards. Now, with a par 70, it's going to have just two par 5s this week, but it's going to have 12 par 4s. And of those 12 par 4s, I believe the 7 of them are between 450 and 500 yards in length. The course itself, a little bit tighter fairways. Placement of the ball is very important. And even though it is a less than driver course, which by less than driver, for those of you that are maybe new to some of the lingo with DFS golf or just PGA in general, less than driver just means guys aren't going to be using their driver a whole bunch. They're going to drop down to say like a three wood or even a driving iron for some of the guys just to be able to be a little bit more accurate. So even though it is a less than driver course, it is still one of the hardest to hit fairways on tour, averaging around that 50 to 55% range. Now, the greens are also small on this course, a little bit harder, so it does put a lot of emphasis for me on strokes gained off the tee and driving accuracy, because you're going to want to be on that fairway to even give yourself a chance to be able to hit those greens. And then I talk about it like every week, and it's probably one of the biggest stats that people are looking for as a predictor on a week-to-week basis is strokes gained approach. So that's kind of like your approach shots, because obviously if you're not hitting the greens, you're not going to have a chance to make those birdie putts or eagle putts or whatever. So strokes gained approaches. But on weeks like this where the greens are maybe a little bit smaller, guys are going to be missing the greens. They're harder to hit greens. The guys that are hitting the most greens, obviously, are going to be the ones who are going to have a chance, going to be up on the leaderboard come Sunday. So that's kind of the trend I'm looking at is strokes gained approach, weighing it a little more than I usually do this week. And then par four scorings, of course, up there just because, like I said, there is 12 par fours this week. And then this course has a ton of water, and I believe I heard Pat Mayo say that over the last, I forget what the length of time was, but there's been more balls in the water here by far than any other course on tour. So for me, bogey avoidance is going to be big. You're going to make bogeys out there because the average score is going to be around that minus 10 to minus 13 range. There's going to be some bogeys out there, but avoiding the big numbers is going to be crucial. The double bogeys, triple bogeys, putting the ball in the water. So bogey avoidance is definitely in my model this week as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's always important to look at what kind of golfer lines up with a course. Is it going to take like a long ball approach? Is it going to take just an accuracy approach? It sounds to me like accurate. I mean, look, in golf, you need to be accurate no matter what, whether the course is long or course is not long. So in the end, it's only accuracy. But the fact that some courses are just going to benefit, or maybe not hamper a guy that maybe can't drive the ball as far as like vintage Tiger or something like that. Knowing that going in can kind of, it seems like it would make it easier to drill down on some of the plays that you want to that you just want to highlight. And it's interesting too because, like you said, this is a week where you aren't getting the cream of the crop in terms of all these golfers. You're gonna have to maybe dig a little further down to try to figure out which one of these golfers lines up with some of the skill set stuff. So let's go down. Maybe we'll go through a couple tiers here. You mentioned there's some big guys at the top here. Dustin Johnson, Mickelson. Trying to look at who some of the other expensive guys are near the top. But where are you kind of looking maybe in this top tier of guys that check all the boxes in terms of what maybe you want to put together for a cash game?
Yeah, for sure. Right now, I'm going to have a little bit of Dustin Johnson at the top. He's the number one player in the world. He's number one in my model right now. He's had some decent course history here with the 5th in 2016, 10th in 2013. He's had top 20s in 5 straight tournaments. I'm just looking at the last 5 on my sheet. He obviously hits on the stats. He's an elite player. He's very expensive, up at 11.7, so you kind of go stars and scrubs with him this week. But what I'm doing, I'm going just below him and Brooks Koepka, and I highlighted these three guys in my article, Phil Mickelson, Henrik Stenson, and Tony Finau. That's going to be like my core in the 9K plus range this week. Mickelson comes in with some excellent course history, 9th, 2nd, 3rd, 11th, and 2nd here at this course over the last 5 years. He's had some pretty good form. He missed a cut 2 tournaments ago, but he's got 13th, 5th. He's been making cuts. And just looking at the model, these are Bermuda green grass here at this course, and I just kind of started looking at some I use Fantasy National just to kind of break down some rolling reports over the last 4, 8, 12, 24, 50, and 100 rounds of golf. And Phil Mickelson's the only player in the field who ranks top 10 in each of those last 4, 8, 12, 24, 50, and 100 rounds on Bermuda greens when looking at strokes gained putting. So he does very well on these greens. He's got good course history. He's number 3 on my sheet in strokes gained approach. He's right up there in par 4 scoring. He's 4th in par 4 scoring, 18th in bogey avoidance, 2nd in birdie or better percentage. Kind of the same thing with Stenson. I was quite surprised kind of looking at some of his stats. He doesn't play a whole lot on the PGA Tour. He's only got 8 events here so far this season. One of them was the team event at the Zurich. But he has made the cut in all but one tournament with 4 top 10s and 7 top 25s. So he's been very consistent, and on my sheet, he's number 1 in strokes gained approach, number 1 in strokes gained ball striking, which is your off the tee plus approach, number 1 in accuracy, number 1 in greens and regulation, which kind of correlates with the strokes gained approach there. He's got good proximity. He's number 1 in par 4 scoring, number 1 in bogey avoidance. So he's actually my number 1 play this week. And initially I thought maybe a starts and scrubs approach wasn't going to quite work just because of some of the lower end guys. As I got looking more, built some lineups already before this podcast, I've got a lot of Phil Mickelson, Stenson paired together and going stars and scrubs, combining those two guys, and I'm really liking my lineup so far. So the third guy, of course, is Tony Finau. He hasn't played here before. A lot of people think of him as just a bomber, but he is sixth in strokes gained approach. And another thing that I like is if you're going to be missing a lot of greens here, you're going to have to be good around the green with scrambling. He's 10th in strokes gained around the green. So definitely looking at him there. So as long as he can hit the fairways, you know, he's probably going to club down into that 3-wood range. He does have a lot of distance. So clubbing down to his 3-wood's probably going to go farther than a lot of the shorter hitters, drivers. So that's good for him. So those are my three top guys in the top range, I guess.
Let me just jump in there for a second because I want to just mention. So I'm just going to bring up our new model now and just tell you where things maybe like this. And we could talk about this with each guy because I know there's a couple guys in the mid-tier too that we would definitely want to hit on. But, you know, in terms of this new model, what we're looking at or what I'm trying to look at is consistency over the long term. So, like, you know, you mentioned you and I talked a lot about this off air, but like, you know, how much it harms you to miss cuts, obviously, just in terms of overall scoring. So we want to be good over the long term. We want to look at some historical stuff when it's available. Not every guy has played at every course and not every single one of them have played at the same amount, right? Like, you know, yeah. Maybe you played the last 3 years and maybe, you know, Dustin Johnson's only played here once over the last 3 years, whereas Phil Mickelson's played every single year. Trying to look at some standard deviation stuff. But in terms of this new model, it has Dustin Johnson as the clear top guy, which makes sense. So in terms of the old sniff test thing, like that is going to make sense to have him just be the overall best projected guy. But Mickelson's a very not too distant second. He's only about, I don't know, I'm going to say about 10% lower than Dustin Johnson. So, and for this model, that's actually pretty, not 10%, 1% difference. That's not all that, really not that all that much of a spread. But after those two guys, there's actually a pretty big drop off. Finau is third, and Stenson is a lot lower. I'm wondering if it's because he just hasn't been as consistent, and maybe some of the course history is harming him a little bit. But so it's interesting to see when it kind of lines up in terms of some of the top plays and where it might be something of an outlier. And this is where I kind of say to myself, well, what needs to be added to bring it up, you know, to make Stenson maybe better because he is a good play, or if the numbers tell the whole story. But I do like when I saw Mickelson's name on here, I was like, oh, good, because when we're running lineups, it kind of is like kind of all – it's just all Mickelson, basically. It's basically saying the 1,100 savings you get on Johnson down to Mickelson, you're getting much more value bang for the buck because it is a little – it does seem like it is a little harder to find – reliable guys in the cheaper tier.
Yep.
And we'll talk about some of these guys, but are you kind of noticing that too when you're putting in lineups that even that $1,100 difference from Dustin Johnson to Mickelson makes a difference just in terms of who else you can fit that you can kind of like, I'm going to put it in quotes, but who you can trust.
Yeah. And exactly right. So like for cash games, I won't be using, like I said, the Mickelson Stenson approach together. I'll probably be going down to like a Tony Finau. Like for cash games, I like to go a little bit more balanced just because there is a little bit higher of a floor when looking at safety rather than, you know, trying to dip down into that low 7K range on DraftKings anyway. And because, you know, they're not as safe and they're that price for a reason. Some weeks you may find one or two guys that are down there and you may be able to attack it, especially like for the majors next week, you're going to notice that the pricing is a lot softer. So maybe getting two of those top guys, you're going to see like a Phil Mickelson under 10K next week, or Tony Finau may even drop down into the 8K range or the mid 7K range. It just the way they set their pricing up for those tournaments. But for this tournament, cash games definitely go a little bit more of a balanced approach. And it's definitely more risky for GPPs going like Mickelson and Stenson. But I do like my lineups just because of the upside of some of the guys at the bottom. The floor isn't there. They could definitely miss the cut, totally screw your lineup over. But the upside is there where, you know, they're going to make the cut and even have upside of a top 25 finish, which if Mickelson and Stenson both finish top 5, one of them wins the tournament. That's really all you need from those scrub guys is it like a top 25, top 20 for you to, you know, have a good cash week. So I think you mentioned Stenson kind of a little bit lower. Might have to do
Let me say that one. Let me say when I say lower, yep. I have a bunch of different models here. So this one is, I'm calling this one the cash floor, right? Because I'm looking for low standard deviations and just, you know, good over the long term, making a lot of cuts. When I look, when I add in, when we have some other upside stuff, when we add in standard deviation going up on the upside, and we add in some Vegas odd stuff, because now we're looking strictly at win point. We're looking, I want to weigh in win points a little bit more than we're doing for cash game. I'm not right. So with cash games, I'm not as concerned with the guy winning or losing. I just kind of want to make sure everyone's around by Sunday.
To get your six through the cut.
Exactly. Like for when we add in the other, when we add in some of these upside factors, Stenson doesn't shoot to the top, but he's like fourth overall, right? So like the things that are maybe hurting him in the cash model are the exact things that are gonna help, that are helping him in more of an upside model. So when we, you know, if you resort based on just adding in some other factors, like if is the guy gonna win, like are his best rounds better than his peers when he's really good, right? Like, and that's where you're gonna give maybe some more of a standard deviation stuff, because you're like, well, when he's really good, right? Yep. But when he's bad, he misses the cut, or he, you know, like, or it just kind of the wheels fall off. And I'm summarizing this to say, like, I don't know if Stenson fits that exact model, but again, I'm coming in this kind of new, so I don't have like the course. I haven't spent every weekend watching all these golfers, but that would be my guess as to like why Stenson is pretty high in one model and a little lower in the other.
Yep. No, you're nailing it there. You know, talking deviations and stuff like that definitely makes a lot of sense. And he doesn't have the course history here, and that hurts him on my sheet as well. Like, he's ranked 13th overall on my sheet, just because they get an automatic, like, they rank near the bottom because they don't have any course history. Same with Finau. There's a few guys, and you notice that, or guys that, you know, say come over from the European Tour, don't have any stats. They're automatically going to go to the bottom of the ranks when looking at stats. So, it's kind of hard in golf to quantify and everything, because not everyone has course history, current form, and stats all together. So you kind of got to look at models sometimes and then just kind of, like you said, pick out why. Why doesn't he show up here, but he shows up here? When you're looking at your floor model versus your upside model, and that makes a lot of sense.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the guys in maybe like the 7,000 to 8,000 range, if we're not going to be able to go, if we're going to take a slightly more balanced approach. Are there other golfers that kind of check a lot of boxes for you this week?
One guy before I want to go forward, I know we talked about this off air a little bit, is Daniel Berger. So he's played here twice. He's won both tournaments, 2016, 2017. Initially this week, I had planned on possibly fading him just because his ownership is going to be sky high because of those back-to-back wins. He's only played here twice. He's won both times. He's coming in with some little bit poor form, outside the top 50 in his last two tournaments. He is really good on Bermuda grass. Now, I started checking things out in like Fanshare Sports. They kind of track tags when looking at every single article, every video, every time someone's mentioned on Twitter, looking at guys. And he has a 50% sentiment rating. So half the people out there that have talked about him in articles or videos or whatever are going to be fading him. So that's a pretty high number. Like, looking at all the other guys that are, say, top 50 in the tag counts this week, the lowest guy after him is like 80%, 90% sentiment rating. So I'm almost changing my tune. I think I might have a little bit more Daniel Berger. If everyone's going to be fading him, probably going to jump on board. So it's just kind of a one or the other. So just wanted to mention him a little bit. So yeah, down into the 7-8K range, a guy that I'm looking at, I've got him highlighted on my sheet, is Ches Reavie. He's got the accuracy thing down. He's 7th in strokes gained approach. He's 8th in strokes gained ball striking. Very accurate golfer, even with proximity. So you've got your greens in regulation, which how many times a player hits the ball and hits the green in regulation. So one less gives himself a birdie chance. Proximity is how close to the pin he gets when he hits that green in regulation. He hits on both there. He hits on bogey avoidance. So the only thing with him this week, because he's also got great course history, his last three tournaments, 4th, 12th, and 27th, he's played here three times the last 5 years, his form is a little bit off right now. So I think that may keep him. It depends what – a lot of the time the ownership goes off course history, not so much form. So I think he's probably going to have a little bit higher ownership than I'd like, but definitely considering him at 7,600, that makes a lot of sense. His odds also correlate, looking at the other guys in that range, in that mid-7K range, his odds and official world golf rank and just how good a golfer he is overall really correlates to that price probably being, I don't know, 5% lower than it maybe should be, considering the kind of golfer he is.
And that makes sense. I mean, that's the, you know, just from a raw number standpoint that we're looking at in this new model, he's another guy that was like a sort of an every lineup guy. He was checking all the boxes. Because you said maybe the form hasn't been as good, but over his last 151 rounds, he only has 8 missed cuts. So we try to add in some dinging multipliers when that kind of happens. That's a pretty consistent guy, and his standard deviation a little bit lower than you'll see in some other guys in his range. And also, like you said, this course history is helping him. And this is one of going to be the thing that's tough over the long term is like the guys that get a little extra boost just because they happen to have played the course. And this is something I want to take a look at over the long term is like how we can mitigate some of those factors. Because the guy shouldn't be penalized for not having played the course before. But at the same time, it really does help if they play the course. Who else are you looking at?
Yeah. So if Ches Ravey's probably he's got 100% sentiment rating, for example. No one has written about him and said they're going to be fading him or anything yet. And so if his ownership is going to be high, and I tracked this all the way up until Wednesday night, one guy I'm going to pivot to is probably going to be less than 5% owned and is like a roller coaster ride. Talked about him in chat this morning is Kevin Chappell. He's got 60-1 odds. He finished fourth here last year, 22nd in 2015. Those are his only two appearances the last 5 years. He's coming in with even worse form. But he checks out on everything but that form, so he's either missing cuts or he's getting the top 20. So it's got the upside, but absolutely no floor. He also checks out in the stats. He's 10th in strokes gained approach, 6th in ball striking. His proximity is up there as well. He hits in birdie or better percentage, so he makes a ton of birdies, but he does make bogeys. So he's still 35th in bogey avoidance, but that's kind of guy you're looking for DraftKings, for GPPs, who's going to make a ton of birdies. He may not win the tournament, but even if he finishes top 20 and makes finishes fifth in birdies, that's going to put him with more DraftKings points than, say, a guy that finishes top 10, but is more, less variance in his game, makes less birdies, makes more pars. But you want the guy that's making more birdies and not as many pars because, obviously that scoring is worth more, especially when you start factoring in bonuses like 3 straight birdies and stuff like that. So he's definitely a pivot off Ches Reavie. And then going a little bit lower this week, a couple guys I'm looking at, like Ben Crane's going to be popular this week. He has excellent course history here. I don't completely trust him a top play. His odds check out, but a couple guys that I'm going to be pivoting off of because he's going to be a popular play, going to be like Grayson Murray. So he's another one. He finished 18th here last year. His form's awful. He's going to probably be in that 5% ownership range, but he's another guy that he may make some bogeys, but he's going to make a ton of birdies as well. So he kind of checks out for that GPP upside model for me. And then Tom Hoagie and Bronson Burgoon right below him, I think they're both going to be low-owned. Not real big names, I guess you'd say, but they've got some course history here, both of them. They're both coming in off of top 20 finishes in their last tournament, and they both check out when looking at strokes gained approach and the birdie side of things too. So I know another guy that you want to talk about down at 7,200 is Austin Cook, and he shows up in my model too as yet again another guy with good course history but coming in with not so great form.
So yeah, Cook, that's one of the guys I wanted to throw out there, because right now I'll just like lay it on you. The lineup that we're putting out, what I'm running is like what's considered to be the optimal lineup, has a couple guys that we mentioned before, and I want you to talk me into this cash game lineup in DraftKings or out of it, and I'm prepared to roll with it, or I'm prepared to pivot off it if need be. So first two guys in there are Mickelson and Reavie. I think you talked about the kind of why we would consider those two guys, so it sounds like we're kind of on the same page there. Austin Cook is another guy that's showing up here as fairly consistent. What about Lucas Glover? Lucas Glover is in that same range as Cook and I forget who you just mentioned a second ago, but he's in the same range as a guy that you, give me 1 second, Chappell. So he's like in the same kind of price range as Chappell, although I haven't projected for a little bit higher for $200 less. Is Lucas Glover a guy that you could see rostering cash, only you haven't mentioned him yet?
Yeah, he's got a lot less variance than Chappell for sure, when looking at like his current form, how he's been doing lately. He's making cuts. He doesn't have the upside of Chappell, but he's not going to miss near as many cuts on tour. So I think he makes sense from that standpoint. And he's got the ball striking. He's 23rd in strokes gained ball striking, a little bit less. So he's good off the tee, but he is a little bit less when looking at your approach shots, and that's kind of where the upside goes away for him, is that he doesn't hit as many greens and doesn't have as good a proximity, so he's not going to make as many birdies, but he's also top 30 in bogey avoidance. So little less variance, so I think he makes sense in cash games as well. And I mean, he's only missed two cuts in 17 events this season. Actually, two cuts in 16 events, because one of them was that team event. But definitely, you know, a 6-6, you're trying to get 6-6 through the cut. Glover does make sense in cash games for sure.
What about, so far, Mickelson, Reavy, Lucas Glover, you mentioned Austin Cook as being a guy that we could probably throw in there and feel okay about, I think you said. What about Charles Howell III? He's another one in a price tier that seems like there could be a lot of different ways to go. So he's in this $8,600 price tier, and we talked about some other guys that weren't Charles Howell III for sure. And he's one I'm wondering, you know, so other guys like in his range are like Stricker at 8,800. System kind of likes him, though the money seems to matter. But he's kind of, I guess I take it back, because he's kind of standing alone in this spot. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna try this name again. Kiradech Afabarnrat. I think
yeah,
I got
you
it.
Got him. You nailed
so
it.
It's actually those two guys, and I'm wondering if it's the system, this new system, bringing them out because they're like kind of the only two guys in this price range that I'm noticing, this in this mid 8,000s price range, and maybe that just ends up being the most important thing. Or I guess I'm throwing out two guys here so we can talk about them separately, but mm-hmm. you know, talk to me about whether or not this makes sense, or if you think this is just simply the numbers calling them out because they just happen to be just the right price to fit the other guys that I mentioned who the system really likes from a points per dollar standpoint.
No, I'm loving where your system and your floor setup and stuff like for cash games for these optimal lineups. I love where it's really going here as we keep making tweaks over the last, even just, what are we, just 2 weeks into doing this now?
Yeah.
You put setting everything up and asking me questions and stuff. Charles Howell is always in consideration for cash games just because he makes a ton of cuts. He's a very consistent player. Like, he has missed four cuts this year, but looking at 2017, he only missed three cuts in 23 events, so he's very consistent that way. He's got the course history, he's got the stats, so he kind of fits all the models for me. He's number 7 in my overall model as well. So, and even though Afabarnrat doesn't have, he does have stats, I guess, on the PGA Tour this season. He's a limited sample size. He doesn't play over here. He's a European Tour regular. So one thing I noticed with him when looking up his stats over on the European Tour, a little bit different when looking at strokes gain stats because it's a whole different field of players. But he was, you know, down in the 70th rank when looking at strokes gain approach and strokes gain off the tee. But looking at his game as a complete, as like a whole, strokes gain tee to green, he was right up there in like the top 25, top 30. And when he does play over here on the PGA Tour, he has been, you know, fairly consistent. He's only missed one cut in all the events he's played on the PGA Tour this year. And his worst finish was back in February, T68. Other than that, he's like T13, T30, T44. And these are in some pretty good fields. Like, that was the Masters, the Players, and the Memorial. Those are some big names in that tournament, really good fields. And he's finishing, you know, for his price, in a very good spot. And this is a much weaker field. So At first, when you told me he was in the optimal lineups, I was a little bit uncomfortable. But after looking at it a little bit more, I think he does play a lot of safety. And, you know, like I said, looking at the mid-range, when you're looking to go maybe a little bit more balanced in cash games, pairing him with a Howell, that's 8,600 and 8,400 on DraftKings, that gives you, you know, a really good core for cash games trying to get 6-6 through the cut.
And my big concern, like I told you off air, was that I just thought it was a sample size issue. We have so many less, because I only really uploaded PGA stats. So he had so much less just of a track record than those other guys.
Yeah.
And that can help you or hurt you, right? With small sample sizes, you're going to get more variance around the limited number of outcomes that you have. So we only have 26 rounds on him in the last 2 years, whereas a guy like Finau has like 150 rounds or something like that. You know, so even the lowest.
Sorry, the thing about Finau is he plays in a lot of weaker field tournaments. And what really swayed me the most, I guess, was looking at the limited sample size of Afabarnrat and the quality of fields that he's playing in. Like, I've got 1, 2, 3 WGC events, so those are your top players in the world. He's got T24 and 2 top fives in the WGCs. And then, like I said, the Masters, Players, and Memorial, his last 3 tournaments. So amazing fields that he's playing in and doing well, so...
All right, well, I'm all in on golf now that I put some numbers behind it. I was always a little lukewarm on it going in, but now that I can actually stare at some numbers and just make my eyes bleed with different percentages and different stuff, now I'm fully all in. Chris, any final thoughts here before we get out of here to enjoy some golf this weekend?
Yeah, one more guy. I wrote about him in the article, but I'll mention him here too if you haven't read the article yet for anyone out there, is Joel Dahman. He finished top 20 here last year. He's not a big name at all. He's number six in my overall model because he's coming in with some excellent form. He doesn't really check the stats a whole bunch. He is an accuracy guy, which is good to see. But, you know, looking at the strokes gain stats, he's like top 50, top 40 in a lot of those stats. But he comes in with some tremendous form. He's finished 16th, 16th, and 20th in his last three tournaments. He's only 7,100 on DraftKings. He's another player I probably consider for cash games. Looking at his odds, he's 90-1 to win right now. And he has the best odds of anyone 7,300 or under for the whole rest of the field. And everyone else is like in the 110 to 200 to 1 odds for him. So, and then I guess the other thing is I'm coming out with a new article this week. We talked about it a little bit. I'm going to work on it today. Hopefully have it out by tonight. Is looking at from a betting perspective, not just outright odds, but also looking at like top 10s, discussing what each way is and how you can benefit from playing each way. You know, top guy from each country kind of thing, all the different kind of betting perspectives and ways that you can play that. First round leaders, another one, and I'm kind of going to discuss, you know, what stats I look at when trying to make bets on first round leader guys and stuff like that.
Awesome stuff, man. Go check out all Chris's stuff on DFSR.com. Right now it's up on the front page. Those will be there for the next couple days. You can also follow him on Twitter at Jaeger_bombs9. He's putting out just tons of content for us. It's always great stuff. Chris, enjoy your weekend of golf, man. I'm going to be fun sweating along with you now.
Yeah, cheers. Let's do it.